Meanwhile, efforts to fight poverty and hunger are being threatened by climate change, with millions of people facing death and devastation due to climate-induced floods, famine, drought, and conflict. That's the somber warning contained in the latest report from Christian Aid, the London-based aid and development agency, which urges the UK government to lead rich nations in taking urgent action to help curb global warming. The report is entitled The Climate of Poverty: Facts, Fears and Hope, and it calls for a revolution in development strategy to encourage rich and poor nations to promote renewable energy sources instead of relying on fossil fuels that cause global warming.
We've got to keep right at the front of our cognizance the whole time. How can we do things in a more efficient, less wasteful way? We've become extremely wasteful in the way we use energy, in the way we use coal and oil and gas, because they've all been far too cheap.
Sir John Horton is former co-chair of the Scientific Assessment Group for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. He says it's time to act on the stark warning contained in this report, and he believes the Christian churches should be in the forefront of this battle against global warming.
It's extremely stark and very concerning, actually, and it's something that everybody needs to realise. You see, as climate change moves ahead, we get more climate change. We've already built in quite a bit into the system by burning fossil fuels and putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. As that increases, various things will happen. One is that sea level will rise, and for people living near the coast, that of course can be very damaging indeed, especially for people in low-lying areas like Bangladesh and southern China. But more than that, with a warmer world, you get a more intense hydrological cycle. That's the cycle that moves water from the oceans into the atmosphere and then down in the rainfall. And that means that we're going to tend to get rainfall which is more intense. We're going to get more frequent and intense floods. We're going to get more frequent and intense droughts, oddly, because this also will affect how dry places are. Now, it's only very recently that scientists have been able to make any credible projections of just what's the risk of droughts and floods will increase. And the latest estimates are that by the middle of the century, the risk in some parts of the world, and that means particularly in some of the developing parts of the world like sub-Saharan Africa, parts of Asia, the risk of droughts and floods will have gone up by perhaps a factor of 5. And that's a fairly conservative estimate. Now, that really is very serious news for people who are trying to grow crops in marginal areas, or even if it's not in marginal areas. You're going to get very frequent floods, and if you're going to get droughts that don't last a few months but last a few years, then that's going to make people feel they can't actually, carry on with agriculture where they are, and they'll have to move. And the number of environmental or climate refugees is likely to run into hundreds of millions.
Now, you're talking about scientific projections, but it's also true to say that up until now, scientists have been unable to agree on just how reliable these projections are, and there are still many who would dispute this as scaremongering to a certain extent.
There are a few people who call themselves scientists who would say that, but the vast majority of scientists in the world who've worked on the climate issue and done real work on it and understand it, would agree with the statements I've just made. Now, I say that because the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, of which I had a big part, involved all the scientists in the world we could find who would work with us, including all the leading climate scientists in the world. And we argued, of course, within our own community, loud and long, but we came up with a consensus view on what the best estimates are of future climate. And just to illustrate how strongly the world scientific community feels about it, last June, the Academies of Science, that's the top scientific bodies in the 11 richest countries of the world, that's the G8 countries, together with India, China and Brazil, issued a statement about climate change. This was before the G8 meeting, saying that climate change really was happening, that climate change is a real threat to humanity, that urgent action has to be taken about it, and that the projections of the IPCC are credible and are the best around.
It's
now,
also
you cannot get a stronger statement from the world scientific community than that.
It's fair to say that this warning has not been heeded so far, has it?
Well, I think it's remarkable, looking at the political scene, how much politicians are talking about it and how much they realise it is a threat to humanity. Our own Prime Minister, for instance, and our Chancellor of the Exchequer constantly talk about it and constantly talk what a threat it is. When it comes to action, of course, that's harder because it means action on all sorts of fronts. The country where the biggest problems arise are the United States. They have some of the best scientists in the world. Their Academy of Science, of course, signed the statement I've just mentioned, but their political establishment at the moment wants to believe it's not happening, and they're not well advised on that.
Is it too late, do you think, to really be able to reverse the kind of trends that you're talking about? And what kind of action is the most urgent action needed to be taken right now if we are to make some kind of reversal of the current process?
Well, it's going to be very hard to reverse what's happened so far. We can try and slow down what's the increase in the damage that's going to occur. And we've just got to do that because otherwise the damage will get even more severe than I've just talked about. Now, the action we can take, it's possible to take it. We can become much more efficient in our use of energy and use much less in the way of coal and oil and gas. We can get our energy from other sources than fossil fuels. We can get it from renewable sources like wind and solar power and biomass. We can grow crops and grow biofuels and so on, and that's beginning to happen, it has been happening in some parts of the world on quite a large scale. There is also the possibility of using nuclear power, and that's being considered because that doesn't create greenhouse gases. And by all those things, we can in fact reduce our emissions very substantially and make a big difference. What the Christian Aid report says, it says we have to do all those things, and this is for governments and industries and individuals to do them too. And it's all possible. The cost of doing it is not large. The cost that's been estimated is less than the cost of the Iraq war, of doing a great deal. But the report goes on to say that that's not the only thing we have to do, because that will slow it all down. But then because we've grown rich on cheap energy from fossil fuels without realizing the damage it would cause, we have a very strong moral responsibility to help those in the world and the poor in the world, the billions of poor in the world, who don't have access to commercial energy, don't have electricity on their doorsteps, and of course desperately need that in order to develop and industrialize. We've got to help them get energy sustainably without using fossil fuels too much by other means. And we can do that so that we can help them with technology. We can share our knowledge of that sort of thing, and we can also help them with investment in order to move them on and to try to bridge the gap, the enormous gap in the world which exists at the moment between the rich and the poor.
As you say, this report is clearly calling on the richest countries to lead the way in addressing this serious threat. And that's going to mean very serious lifestyle changes, isn't it, for people living in Western countries used to the kind of luxuries that we come to see as everyday necessities almost. Can you talk about some of the basic changes that people should be looking ahead to?
Yes, I mean, people sometimes, you know, dress it up as if it was going to mean tremendous reversals of our lifestyle. But we can still have motor cars, and we can still do all the things we want to do. We have to just change our attitudes very strongly indeed, so that when we go shopping, we try to buy things that haven't used too much energy. When we buy appliances, we buy very much more efficient ones than many of those on offer. When we buy a motor car, we buy the most efficient one we can find. We try to reduce our travel in order to cut the greenhouse gases. And we try to not travel on aeroplanes any more than we have to. But that isn't such a large change of lifestyle. It's a very big change in attitudes, however. We've got to keep right at the front of our cognizance the whole time. How can we do things in a more efficient, less wasteful way? We've become extremely wasteful in the way we use energy in the way we use coal and oil and gas, because they've all been far too cheap.
This report is entitled Hope Amid the Crisis. Do you think there is still a lot of hope that countries, particularly these wealthy nations, will find the political will to address this and to address this problem now?
Well, that's, I think, the challenge to all of us. And I think it's a particular challenge to the Christian world, because as Christians, we have a real responsibility to love our neighbour, whether he's next door or whether he's in Bangladesh or in Mozambique or wherever, and to take real care of people who can't care for themselves. And that Christian imperative, I think, is something that the churches should be pushing extremely strongly. I've been spending quite a bit of time working with some of the evangelicals in America who are nearly all supporters of President Bush and right-wing and so on, but they are beginning to pick up the message that this is something they've really got to take on board and really do something about. And in fact, in February of this year, quite a large number of their leaders actually issued a statement to that effect and took half a page or a page advert in the New York Times to say so. So there is a movement in the Christian community, and if the Christian community worldwide really got together on this issue, we could do a tremendous lot to try to turn it around.
My thanks there to Sir John Horton, former co-chair of the Scientific Assessment Group for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and one of the experts backing Christian Aid's report.